Well, welcome, everyone. Let me introduce myself. My name is Gideon Taylor, and I have the great honor to serve since July 1st as the Executive Vice President and CEO of the Jewish Community Relations Council of New York. So thank you for joining us today for the Community Relations Corner. So what is the Community Relations Corner? It's a chance for us to come together to discuss issues of concern both to New York's Jewish community and to our friends and partners in New York. It's an opportunity to educate, to discuss, and to talk about the critical issues of the day that impact all of us as New Yorkers. So today we're interrupting our usual summer break and having these sessions to discuss the tragic crisis in Haiti. So why is that a community relations issue? Because as New York's primary community relations organization, JCRC, is deeply concerned about, involved, and engaged in the challenges that face our Haitian American neighbors and friends. We frequently partner with the local community, the local Haitian community, including our partners in the Haitian American Caucus and Diaspora Community Services in a variety of coalitions, quality life coalitions that seek to improve life in New York. So we work together on issues like healthcare disparities, COVID relief, achieving food justice. And following the earthquake in 2020, JCRC developed a three-year leadership fellowship for the Haitian community, which worked with dozens of emerging leaders within the city's community by helping to empower them to respond to the needs of the community, both in New York and in Haiti. So, and as we in New York well know, the conditions and events around the world impact us here in New York. So things that are international are also local. And just as the Jewish community is entwined with international events that happen in the Middle East and around the world, so the Haitian community is intertwined with Haitian society. And that's the reason we're so grateful to be joined today by two guests who are major leaders in the community. Firstly, Corinne Jocelyn, who serves as CEO of Diaspora Community Services, which is a not-for-profit organization of Haitian American professionals committed to civic engagement and strategic initiatives working with the Haitian community. She has been a long-term partner of JCRC in the Greater Southern Brooklyn Health Coalition and the We Are All Brooklyn Leadership Fellowship. She's traveled to Israel with JCRC and today is a member of the Brooklyn Healthcare Disparities Coalition that is so important for JCRC and our work. And we are proud to have such a strong and committed partner in our work. Welcome, Corinne. Let me also introduce another major partner of JCRC, New York City Council member Farah Lewis, who represents District 45 in Central Brooklyn. So Farah is daughter to Haitian immigrants to Brooklyn. She's an alumna of the Haitian Leadership Fellowship that I mentioned. She's traveled to Israel with some of our JCRC New York staff. She serves as co-chair of the Women's Caucus and vice co-chair of the Black, Latino, and Asian Caucus. She's a member of the committees on civil service and labor, economic development, education, finance, women and gender equality. Earlier this year, she was appointed as chair of the Committee on Mental Health, Disabilities, and Addictions. And we really, really appreciate our close partnership with you, council member. And just to illustrate how immediate the issue we're discussing today is, council member has told us she may have to jump off for a call with Chuck Schumer, our senator, on the issue of securing aid for Haiti. So as long as you can stay with us is great, and we understand when you need to drop off, that's fine. And obviously all our support and encouragement for what you're doing is there for that call and in general. So if I could sort of open up and really thank you both for coming and thank you both for being such partners for us and in all our work in New York. Maybe you can start by telling us just a little bit about the community here and your own sort of connection and relationship and how it is intertwined with Haiti and a little bit about the community here. So maybe Farah, would you want to kick off with that? Would be just love to hear your thoughts on that.
Of course. Thank you, Gideon, and congratulations on your appointment. And I thank you for the opportunity to join you and Colleen Jocelyn today for this conversation. So I am the council member for the 45th Council District in Brooklyn, and we do have a large Haitian population. It's the second largest out of Haiti and out of Miami. So it's mostly in the East Flatbush, Flatbush, and Midwood areas. We have a large Haitian population. And our people are very resilient people. They've been here for many, many years and are part of the fabric of New York City. They participate in economic development with small businesses. A lot of them have schools. A lot of them are healthcare workers, teachers. They encompass so much here in New York City and really help this city to thrive. So while we are from back home in Haiti, we make up a large portion here in the city, and we give so much of ourselves to the city of New York.
Terrific. And maybe just share with us a little bit about family connections that you have to Haiti. Just interesting for us from a personal level.
Of course. Yeah, so my parents come from Haiti. My mom is both from Bahamas and Haiti, and my dad and his whole family is from Haiti. I don't have any family that was impacted by the recent earthquake. They are from the area, but they were able to get out in time to go to other neighboring towns for safety. So they're fine, thank God. And we can't say the same for everyone else. But what I can say is where we are right now with this whole situation is trying to provide as much resources as possible to folks in the area. We do have people from our district who were impacted, which is why I worked with the mayor to support families here in New York City who have family that was impacted by the earthquake. So right now we're offering free mental health and grief counseling services in two neighborhoods in our district. I believe direct impact is very important. And what all of us leaders, myself, Colleen, every Haitian leader, organization, influencer, however you may label them, we all do not want to make the mistakes that was done in leadership in 2010. After that earthquake, or 2016 during the Hurricane Matthew. We want to make sure that we're coming together as leaders to provide as much support now so that we're not putting Haiti in more of a deficit. We're being more vocal. We're being more careful, making sure that funds are going to the right organizations, reputable organizations, and NGOs that are on the ground that could really support the people in Haiti. But from here in New York City, I would say that I'm very appreciative for the support of the mayor to provide free mental health and grief counseling services. I called the commissioner of NYPD, and he opened up all 73 precincts so that they could be hubs to collect medical supplies and baby supplies. It's like everybody working together, everybody putting in an effort to help Haiti, because it's bigger than just Haitians, right? It's humanity. It's having compassion for a nation that we have a representation of that here in New York City. So I'm just honored to have the support of so many organizations and agencies from around the city.
That's, it's certainly good to hear. And I think certainly as we watch the news, we're all so deeply concerned about what's happening. Maybe just before we go to Corinne, maybe just give us your perspective on the lessons learned. And you spoke about that, and I know certainly that's been a concern. From your perspective, you know, what do you think are the lessons that can be learned from what happened before in the previous earthquake? And how do you see this being a better response? And are you optimistic that it will be a better response?
I believe we're all optimistic, but we have to be honest, we're here in New York. So we can't see directly what's happening on the grounds until we physically go. But what I can say is we're being more strategic. We're being more intentional as leaders in our community. One lesson I could say we learned was we knew what NGOs were making funds off the backs of Haitians in Haiti. We knew who were the bad actors. And that was after the fact. That happened in 2010. We're finding out about that years later that millions, billions of dollars going to NGOs never got to particular towns and communities in Haiti. And we don't want to make those mistakes again. We know that there are organizations on the grounds that could provide those services. Another lesson learned, I would say, is we weren't thinking about infrastructure and sustainability. We weren't thinking, how can we make sure that we're rebuilding these towns, rebuilding these cathedrals, rebuilding these roads? We know that the president, before he was assassinated, was working on some initiatives, but us as descendants of Haiti, daughters, sons of Haiti, there are opportunities now for us to support organizations on the ground that can provide sustainability by rebuilding homes, rebuilding roads, and the infrastructure of Haiti. There's so many goods that come out of Haiti that go to other places around the country, but we don't get the same support coming back. So we know now, if you wanna do business with Haiti and if you wanna support our nation, our people, you have to come to the table with all of us to have this conversation. We need to make Haiti what our parents told us about Haiti. And that's this big, beautiful, independent Black nation and republic that is thriving, and it has to continue to thrive. And that starts with us making sure that we secure and we fight for Haiti as much as possible.
Wow, beautifully put. And Karine, so tell us a little bit your connection, you know, a little bit something of the community and the community here in New York and your ties to Haiti would be great.
Sure. Thank you so much. And thanks to the councilwoman really putting into perspective that as Haitians, we are, you know, in essence suffering because our people are suffering. We love Haiti. We love who we are as a people. And this is obviously a very difficult time for us. It's only been about 10 days. And so trying to figure everything out, even for myself this morning, working on coordination of a shipment that's leaving today, there's just so many things going on, and we certainly understand the importance of the need. I think in terms of here, you know, I kind of have two hats in my participation today. I'm the CEO of Diaspora Community Services, which was really started by the Haitian community. It was formerly known as the Haitian Women's Program, founded in 1981 to help Haitian immigrants that had come to this country. Some of them, they helped with resettling folks from Guantanamo Bay. And it also was at the time when the HIV epidemic started. And so I always like to give credit to those who came before me. And so Diaspora could not be what it is without the help of those women and those individuals in the 80s that started the organization. Today, we're like every social service organization in New York City, really trying to do our best. Often under-resourced. We are based in Central Brooklyn, which has one of the highest populations of Haitians living outside of the country, outside of Florida, I think is number one. So for us, in terms of our work in Haiti, in 2007, Diaspora started a local community health center. Our approach was really to look at how do we build their capacity to start and to do what they need to do, and then for us to turn it over in 10 years. From 2007 to 2010, we were getting a little closer, and then the 2010 earthquake. And so we continued that support through 2014, but it is being run by local control, local doctors, local nurses, local educators, et cetera. And I think that's part of the message when we're talking about Haiti development moving forward, that there are people in Haiti who can do the work. There are physicians, there are nurses, there are engineers, there are, you know, so many different folks that have talent and experience. Many Haitian Americans who actually returned to Haiti, I meet more and more of them as time goes by, who went back, who wanted to help and to be able to do great things. For me personally, my family, my father is from Lekai. We call it Okai in our own kind of chat. Fortunately, I don't have anyone who was impacted. But, you know, when one person is impacted, we're all impacted. To have the loss of 2,000 lives, to see homes destroyed, schools destroyed, healthcare facilities destroyed, churches, you know, it's just overwhelming. I personally have stayed away from the news, have not looked at too many pictures because it's overwhelmingly just really emotional for me. For us at the Haitian Women's Collective that I founded in 2017, or a group of Haitian women-led organizations, most of the women are based in the New York tri-state area and have experience in working in Haiti. They founded various organizations around the country that address various sectors, education, health, midwifery, economic development, leadership, civic engagement. And so this is an opportunity that we see. This was not part of our strategic plan, but, you know, things happen. And so we have responded as a collective to ensure that our, obviously our members and partners are connected. Within a week's time, we provided immediate cash to women-led organizations in Haiti because we believe the people of Haiti know what they need. They know how to source things. And, you know, that was really our immediate and first respond and phase one for us.
So I think it's so interesting for us from the Jewish community, you know, even in the name of the organization of the word diaspora, which obviously for us carries certainly a connotation. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think just even, and often it's in a name of an organization that tells you mm-hmm. something about the, what it means and what stands behind it. And I guess it sounds to me that it's a testament to just how closely connected the community here is to Haiti. And obviously from everything you said, that's obviously a very deep and emotional connection and certainly one we relate to, I think very much.
Absolutely. I mean, when we talk about the word diaspora, I've actually interacted with many people that go, are you a Jewish organization? Because diaspora means people who are living outside of their land, right? That they still have a connection. So all of those women of the Haitian Women's Collective, even they're here, they've been working 25 years. I was born here. The reality is we stay connected. These are our families and our people. And you're absolutely right. You know, the connection is so strong. My trip to Israel was really transformative for me. In fact, in 2010, same year of the earthquake, I reflected on that this morning. And I remember being in Israel and driving through on one of our tours. And there were many, I guess, farms in the area that I was in. I don't remember what city that was. And I kept asking the guy who was the tour guide, well, what are they planting here? And what are they growing here? Because I'm often trying to compare when I go to different places, what can go on in Haiti. And he finally said, after all those questions, said, whatever we can make in Israel, whatever we can grow is what we grow. And that stayed with me 12 years later, almost, right? 11 years later, that that I think is when we talk about sustainability. Haiti was one of the richest countries many years ago, had an agricultural sector, which has been dismantled by international actors, including former President Bill Clinton, who, you know, said he was sorry that that happened. So the connection, as we say, is strong. We remain committed, and we know that we have a lot of work ahead.
Wow. And so, yeah, the connections are just so many. I keep reflecting just from what you both say about sort of so many parallels. Let me ask you a question, maybe, Farah. You know, Haiti has obviously, there's been so much step. Each time there seems to be a stability, and there's been obviously and most recently the political instability with the killing, and then now with this. What's your sense from talking to people, you know, what's the mood, not just of not obviously the people in the area that was devastated, but is this seen and felt deeply at a national level as just a sort of a trauma? I don't know if trauma is the right word, certainly of such another huge challenge. Just give us a sense from a national perspective how people feel about that and what the response and thought about this earthquake is. It's so hard for a nation that has clearly, you know, buffeted by, as you say, with such a strong history, with such so many things to go for it, and yet so many things that have challenged it in recent years.
It's definitely traumatic. I think that's the right word to use. And now that we're removing the taboo and the stigma of having conversations on mental health, this is the right time to have these conversations about trauma, how to deal with trauma, how to deal with what we're feeling. And as you just stated, we've gone years and years and years with trauma being compounded. The assassination of the president just happened last month. Then we had the cholera outbreak. We had coups. We've had earthquakes. We had hurricanes. There are a plethora of things that have been happening in Haiti that the whole nation, the whole world may not be aware of because they're not always paying attention. It's just when these catastrophic incidents happen, that's when, you know, I would say everyone around the world is a bit more alert on what's happening. However, we do need to have these conversations about the trauma, how it affects us, and how we can start healing and moving forward. So we have to find spaces to learn how to cope, how to have these conversations, and what could we do to support the people on the ground and family here and New York City.
What do you think, or either of you, you know, obviously resilience is like at the core for any nation or any group that's affected by that kind of trauma. Is there resilience, do you think, in the population? Is it something that can be built on? Is there, how, you know, tell me a little bit about your perspective on that from the society in Haiti.
You know, I the resilience thing, I kind of shy away from it a little bit, because resilience kind of comes with, you have to be strong, you have to deal with it, mm-hmm. handle your business, this is where we're at, go for it. And for our people right now, even through responding through this crisis and disaster, they're traumatized. You could not be traumatized. The entire country is traumatized. You know, they can't believe that this has happened again, and that they have to respond again. In some of the pictures that you showed also, I see those and I think about some of the pictures that I've seen of Boy Scouts trying to put together wood and roofs in Campérin, which is one of the areas that has been affected. I saw an article just yesterday about young doctors in Haiti, recent graduates who showed up together. They got themselves going and did what they needed to do. But it doesn't mean that, yes, they're resilient, but that they're not suffering. And I think, quite frankly, for those of us in the Haitian American diaspora community, we too are struggling. It has been extremely challenging. It's been, you know, extremely emotional. We just can't believe that this has happened again, and here we are again. And so that resilience is important. I agree with the councilwoman that mental health and trauma and trauma-informed care, in fact, it is something that I hope to follow up with Councilwoman Louis about, being able to provide trauma-informed training, which we have done at Diaspora for our staff members, to open that up to some of the Haitian organizations to be able to participate as well. Most of us are not on the ground there in Haiti right now. I mean, we're here talking to you today. But for those of us who are participating or putting things together and plan to be in our country, we have to connect to our own people. I think that training would be really helpful to all of us moving forward.
I think the point you make about sort of the strength of local people on the ground. I mean, in one of my earlier careers, I was with the Joint Distribution Committee, which is an international relief aid agency on behalf of the Jewish community, which is actually working in Haiti. And I spent 10 years there, also overseeing some of our programs internationally. And it always struck me as I traveled often after disasters, natural or man-made, you know, there's this balance between what an external actor can do, and aid agencies obviously come with a lot of clout and resources and experience. But at the end of the day, if it's not partnered with, an agency doesn't have, and there isn't an infrastructure that's there and built up of infrastructure, physical and people, more importantly, people, there's no lasting impact. And I think your point's well made, as both of you said, and just finding ways and having agencies just to strengthen that, especially in a country that has such a strong population and so many people who have that, it certainly echoes in my mind from everything I saw in my visits in different countries in a post-disaster environment. So I know there's a number of agencies that some of you have recommended. Actually, when we finish, as we come to the end of the broadcast, we'll put up on a screen on our website. I should mention it now, actually, on the JCRC website, we list some of the agencies, partners that you have proposed and other agencies working there. Anyone can go to the JCRC website, jcrcny.org. To see that, and there you'll see on the homepage some of those agencies doing tremendous work. And I'm sure agencies that are going to be looking at this issue not simply as the today issues, and it's so important what's being done today to gather immediate supplies immediately on the ground, but tomorrow and after the cameras have disappeared and after the news stories are gone, that's the real measure and test. And I think everything you said just so feeds into that point. One point I wanted to sort of ask you, obviously, in we you have all of these challenges to deal with, you, us, the world trying to deal in a natural disaster, in this disaster situation, and we got COVID. So maybe tell us a little bit about the impact of COVID. And, you know, COVID's so unique in that it's something we, you know, that it's so international, something that's felt in New York, in Haiti, Israel, Europe, everywhere. So how, but obviously the impact in different countries is obviously felt very differently. So maybe you can share with us just a little bit about what the situation is with regard to COVID, and obviously I'm sure making everything just so much harder.
Yeah, I'll go. You know, this morning I had a conversation with one or two leaders based in Haiti, and a few things about COVID. One for us is the Haitian Women's Collective. I mean, we are in New York, so we were in the epicenter of the epicenter of the epidemic. And so our fear, because right, you're always connected to home, is to think about what if this happens to Haiti? And if you've ever been to Haiti, it's very much like many other communities or countries. There are markets, there's a lot of people. People are hopping on the back of trucks. I mean, it's quite, you know, vivid and exciting, and lots of people in markets and open markets. And that was really our fear. And so we launched a COVID prevention effort late last year into earlier this year, again, around the country for the different members. And we used different mediums to do that. We used media, we used social media, we did street outreach. You know, we had billboards up and so forth because we thought it was so important. And then we didn't really hear anything. You know, none of our family members, my colleagues, nobody was really saying that they're getting COVID. So, I mean, at this point, we, our hope is that with the earthquake, that we don't see an increased number of COVID cases. The Ministry of Health is doing its best to manage that. I think there are some systems in place that are really helpful. One, you have, when you're going into the country, you have to be tested, right? You have to have a negative test. So I think that's great. I'm hoping that most of the people who are visitors, first responders, are also vaccinated, because I think that's another level that's really helpful. But the vaccine Moderna is being distributed in Haiti, in Port-au-Prince, from what I know. I don't know so much about the external places. And so that's a priority. We want to be sure, certainly, that the areas affected by the earthquake, that vaccines are readily available. But as of now, there is a system and process that is in place, supported by the Ministry of Health.
And just to add on to what you're sharing, Karin, and thank you for sharing that key point. We know volunteers, relief efforts are being provided on the grounds, but we know some of these people may not be vaccinated. They do ask for the exams, but I haven't heard about anybody needing to present a card to get on the plane. So we worked with U.S. Senator Schumer's office, and they were able to provide 500,000 Moderna vaccines in Haiti since the earthquake. So we know that they're being distributed. Are they being evenly distributed? We did ask for a report on that when we met up on Saturday. So I know that they're going to be working that out with the ambassador of Haiti to ensure that it's getting all over the island, as well as the area that was recently impacted by the earthquake.
That's so good to hear. And but tell us a little bit also about, while we're on it, in terms of COVID, the impact on the community here of COVID, how, you know, it's obviously been difficult for every community. Now, how does the community feel about the situation? Are people optimistic, pessimistic, or how difficult has it been in the community compared with other communities here in New York?
I'm going to let Colleen elaborate on that, and I'll speak about it on a governmental level, but she deals with the population directly.
Yeah, it's been rough. Well, as I said in my introduction about our work at Diaspora, we're in Central Brooklyn, which was disproportionately impacted by COVID, and I think continues to be so. We know that even though vaccines are out there, we're really working and, in fact, have a vaccine education program to kind of get more people vaccinated, get to them on the street, talk to them, answer their questions, make them feel comfortable, let them know that people that look like them, live in their communities, speak their languages, are also getting the vaccine, and that we had concerns. I mean, I have a 14-year-old son. I was a little bit concerned about him getting the vaccine when they talked about young people and some of the the side effects, right? So I think that community to community, if you will, that connection one-on-one is really important if we're going to move forward with this. Our response really has been education, education, education. Obviously within our organization, systems of, you know, safety are in place, but really I think it's keeping this at the forefront of people's minds outside of Brooklyn, areas like East Elmhurst and Corona, which has a large Haitian population as well, and in the Bronx. So those key places that really had some of the highest numbers, we've had to respond with education. We did a food pantry. We did cash assistance for immigrants and undocumented workers. And now we are also a site for the excluded workers program through the Department of Labor, which is really important for those that weren't able to get, you know, part of the stimulus, or they were not eligible for unemployment. They now can get the support of the Department of Labor to be able to get some form of cash assistance. And we really felt that that was important for the communities and the individuals and families that we serve.
And Gideon, just to add to that, we had to look to and partner with organizations like Karin's, because if we didn't have that, they are the credible messengers. They deal with the populations directly. So it's two key things, the accessibility and the credible messengers, in order to get our constituents to go out and get the vaccine. And this is an effort that is still ongoing till now. There's still vaccine hesitancy from our community. In the beginning, it was vaccine equity that we were fighting for. And now that we have access to it, everyone is hesitant. So that's something that we're going to continue to work on with all of our local partners.
Tell us just a little bit, we've got a few minutes, just a couple of minutes more, and I see a couple of questions coming in. Healthcare in Haiti generally, challenging, I'm sure. Is it up, do you think? Is it strong enough to deal? Is it being strengthened, or are the steps being done? How do you just see the framing of healthcare? Obviously such a core issue for every country and every city in its different ways. Maybe you could just share with us a little bit about that.
So the healthcare sector in Haiti is supported obviously by the Ministry of Health. And Haiti has 10 million people, but the budget of Haiti is for healthcare is less than 10%. And for 10 million people, many who live in poverty, as you can imagine, that certainly is not enough. However, I think the Ministry of Health is trying their best to coordinate. They're using local physicians and nurses and allied professionals to get to the more remote areas because they know those areas. The Ministry of Health has different health centers and some hospitals throughout the country. When we talk about the strengthening of the Ministry of Health, I think it's important that organizations that say they are doing healthcare in Haiti, who receive millions of dollars, not little people like me, the ones who are saying we're doing healthcare, and many have their own health centers and hospitals, and I think that that's great for the people. The challenge, and as you know, in terms of international aid, is it's not always the strengthening of the capacity, right, of the organization, of the government, in terms of their governance and how they do business moving forward. So I'm hoping, similar to like the council member said, that we are able to say, look, you're here, we're grateful for this help. And this is what I ask people, is this a short emergency response and you're leaving in a month or 3 months? Are you here for short term to do a particular project? And or are you here to strengthen the capacity of the people of Haiti to be able to take care, serve themselves, not be dependent on you anymore, and or work with you? There are many wonderful NGOs, many that I've interacted with in Haiti that do really great work. So I also want to be sure that people are not saying we're not going to give to Haiti, because my 18-year-old told me all of that is on, you know, Twitter and all in the world about not giving to Haiti. I don't think it's about not giving to Haiti. It's about who you give to, what are they doing? How are they doing it? Are they able to do the work in a way that is respectful of a human rights framework around accountability and transparency and the participation of local people? I think that that's really important. And so, you know, the Ministry of Health, I think, is doing a solid job? Do they need more help? Of course. Haiti is a small country, and we're under resources and oftentimes exploited country. And so we don't have, you know, a network like, you know, HHC or anything like that. But I think so far their response, I think, should be recognized.
Terrific. And I think last sort of question, let me just sort of throw if I can to a council member. Do you think the help that's coming from, and you are obviously playing such an important role in that, from the US, I guess there's partly from a governmental point of view, and then I want to close on talking about what we as citizens can do from a governmental level and point of view. Do you think you're reaching what is there that responsiveness and awareness? Are you getting a positive feeling about what we as a country can do, are doing?
If we're talking about the US, the response is very slow. And I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for this, but I feel that if the numbers were more catastrophic, we would have had a larger response. But because they're hearing maybe it's about like 2,000 people that were killed and even more injured, they don't think that it's that serious of a matter. And it depends on who you speak with. I'm really grateful for Senator Chuck Schumer, who sits with us, has conversations, and he's getting us resources. And now what I'm seeing is that the story is slowly dying. The conversation is slowly dying about Haiti. And we have to keep it up because the resources are still needed in Haiti. The people are still suffering there due to the earthquake. And it shouldn't have to take for something to be so catastrophic for people to want to respond. An earthquake is an earthquake. People are dying and they need the support. But what I'm grateful for, I would say in the short term that the US is providing right now through the Majority Leader's office is access to generators, helicopters to transport patients to other hospitals and other areas in the country so that those that are injured could receive the quality healthcare needed for them to survive, proper care from providers. I know USAID deployed a group of providers, doctors, mental health providers to Haiti over the weekend, and medical supplies going directly to the grounds, because we know that sometimes if you send it to go directly to Haiti to an organization, they may not receive it due to the gang violence, gun violence that's happening on the ground. But I do believe that we have a few folks in our government that want to help Haiti both short and long term to provide the services that are needed to get the people back on their feet.
Well, thank you. You know, I think we're very blessed, and you see it in the comments, some people saying that directly, and let me just echo it too. Certainly to have leaders of your caliber and with engagement, I think we're all fortunate. So thank you really for what you're doing, just as New Yorkers and as both what you're doing here and for Haiti. You know, and I think your point, Farah, about, you know, the size of tragedy is such an important one. We've a saying in the Jewish tradition, you know, if you save one life, it's as if you save the world. And I think it's your point, 2,000, 3,000, 10,000, you know, 200, it doesn't really, really matter. And in the scheme of things, and obviously it's important in terms of logistics and what one does, but from a connection to a tragedy and a response to a tragedy, I think the connection and the ties to Haiti are deep and strong between New York and Haiti, not only between the community, but I think for a lot also in the Jewish community. And that goes back to the early earthquake and previously. There's a number of, you know, of people from the Jewish community very concerned about it. The Joint Distribution Committee, who I mentioned, and we included it in the chat there, have a mailbox to have activity there. The Israel Aid, an Israeli group of volunteers, have also sent a group there that also feel it's important to have a response. And obviously there's a number of patient groups that you've suggested and others have suggested, all on our website. Actually, you can see it, I see on the page here, jcrcny.org. So I think there are ways that we can reach out to help organizations, certainly to help the work that the council member is doing of encouraging political support for this in the United States is important. And I think all I can say is, look, our thoughts and our blessings are with you. Personally, I hope they'll have a chance in my new role to come and to visit with you in the community here, maybe together in Haiti sometime, to try to keep that connection, a very close connection between the Jewish community here and the Haitian community here in New York, to keep that strong. And to those who are suffering, and to those in areas you know so well, really our thoughts and prayers. And this is a discussion, a conversation that we would very much like to continue to have as we go forward. So I thank you so much all for joining us. Thank you for everyone who joined us. And thank you both, Karine and Farah, and we will continue the conversation.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Gideon. And I'm grateful to Zaid and RC for their support and partnership.
Yes, always. Thank you so much. Yep. See you soon, Farah. See you in the trenches. Thank you.